Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Welcome to the AA meeting on air. My name is Graham and I am an alcoholic.
G'day Graham. Hello
Graham.
Chairperson for today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer and I invite you to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Check.
Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Today we have the home group from Newtown on Wednesday nights at 7:30, and we've got Tim. Hi, Tim. We've got Matt, and we've got Jacob. I'll start the meeting off and ask Matt to read how it works.
Thanks, Graham.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic.
G'day, Matt.
This is how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. What are you laughing at? They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened and what we are like now. If you have decided what you want, or you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for his knowledge, the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed,
What an order. I can't go through with it. But don't be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thanks, Matty.
Thanks, Matt. This is AA on air, and you can reach us on 0800 AA Works, that's 0800 229 6757, or our website is www.aa.org.nz, that's www.aa.org.nz. And I'm now going to invite Tim to share.
Or shall we go Jacob?
We're going to go Jacob.
No.
Okay. Here we go, Jacob.
Hey, I'm Jacob, I'm the alcoholic.
Hey, Jacob.
I've been asked to go first because my story's not too long and I can't really talk for 10 minutes about it, you know. So young fella in AA, bit of a funny one when you walk into a room and you're the youngest in there by about a decade. it makes you feel a bit out of place, but, you know, that's why I was very fortunate with coming into AA. There's still a few young people around, which is good. And my story is not too long. Like I said, grew up middle of nowhere. You know, usual. Daddy didn't love me, beat the shit out of me. Sorry, I can't swear. Older brother yanked himself, which, you know, kind of sent me into a bit of a depressive hole for a while and made Dad a lot worse. So I started, you know, drinking to kind of cope with that. But, you know, as it says in the big book, we simply drink because we like the feeling of it, or something like that. Tim will correct me later if that's wrong. But yeah, grew up middle of nowhere, went to private school for a little bit, for a year, hated it, so I managed to get myself kicked out by getting the older boys to buy me piss so I could blatantly drink in the dorms. Moved back to Hawke's Bay, went to public school, and eventually moved out of home, came down to Wellington to do university. I was living in the halls of residence, which was great, you know, it was just non-stop party for a while. Yeah, my drinking slowly spiraled. People started, you know, kind of realising and pushing me away, as, you know, that's the common story. Drinking gets worse, people leave. But, you know, my lowest point was one night in the halls, a guy called me an alcoholic. So I got a hold of him and I actually strangled him till he was unconscious. You know, not my proudest moment, and I had to get dragged off of him by a couple of my other mates, just because, you know, I would have killed him. Thank God I didn't get any, you know, legal trouble with that. But, you know, it's just reflection of the alcoholic mind, because I didn't even realise I was doing it really, you know. Drug-infused and alcohol-infused, you know. I passed my first semester of law, which I was studying at the time, through the power of cocaine and Ritalin, which I was then rewarding myself with a bottle of whiskey at the end of a good study session and just frying everything I just learned, you know. So kind of undoing it myself. Yeah, man, so just kind of continued that way for a while. You know, I got worse and worse and drank more and drugged more, and people started pushing me away till I was basically by myself in my halls of residence, smoking weed out the window and doing cocaine to wake me up in the morning. And then when in my head was like I was too wired out of my mind, I'd be doing shots to kind of calm myself down. I rocked up hungover and half pissed to my law exam. Still got an A though. yep. Superpower, you know, I could start doing an essay at night and then I'd get pissed and I'd wake up and it would be done and I wouldn't have to suffer doing it, you know. Yeah. But I had to then fix all the grammatical errors and all the, you know, the crap that was in it. I just went off on tangents about drinking was great. People say that my best day sober is better than my worst day drinking. My worst day drinking is better than my best day. Whatever the fucking saying is, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, but, you know, for me, I had some really good times drinking, you know. It wasn't entirely rubbish, man, but when it was bad, it was really bad. So I think, you know, my best day sober is better than my best day drinking, but, you know. Yeah. This year, March 1st, I quit drinking. I still didn't think I was an alcoholic, you know, and I've just got an issue with alcohol, stopped for a while. Took me a few days, and then I finally came into AA because I was having, it was the cravings, man, you know, that mental obsession with alcohol. Then I was like, oh, I need it. And then I was sweating and shaking. And I went to one of my flatmates. I went, dude, I just got to go to a meeting, man. So I went to Tapu-Turanga Island Bay. I walked in and I was expecting, you know, 50 old men sitting there, you know, and it's just, or, you know, some brown bag alcoholics. And they just seemed like really put together people. And I was just like, damn, I'm shaking, I'm sweating, I'm this like 19-year-old, like, fat little white boy. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I do not belong here. And then they started sharing, you know, it's just, people were automatically off the bat worse than I was because I only drank from 16 till 19. And hopefully, you know, knock on wood, I stayed that way. But thank you, Matt. and Tim. No, but, you know, I've got coming up 6 months in 2 weeks.
Good on you, Jack.
Yeah. Yep. This is my second time on here. I was on here with Happy Hour a few months ago. I think I was only like a month sober when I did that, which was a bit of an ask. But my sponsor at the time, you know, I've forgotten his name now. You know, he doesn't talk to me anymore. So, yeah, he's dead to me. Joking. That's a joke. that is a joke. Yeah, Archie, if you are listening, I'm sorry, mate. he's buggered off. So Tim to my right, who you'll hear from later, has very kindly picked me up. And, you know, it's been better. You know, I call him every day now. I'm starting into that routine, you know. If I wake up, you know, a lot of the time I'm like a raw nerve. You know, I wake up and I'm feeling everything, you know, so I'll go for a run until I'm not angry anymore or until I'm vomiting, and then I'll go to the gym. And then I'll call Tim. And, it kind of just sets me up every day, you know, get into that right headspace, talk to my higher power, and that's everything that I'm learning through being in AA. Just that, you know, regular meetings regularly. I'm doing five-ish a week, five or six sometimes, trying to, you know, just be constant and be in the fellowship, be an AA guy and a big book guy, you know, reading the big book, highlighting the big book like my sponsor Tim tells me to do. And just trying to be a better person for myself today and be a better person for myself tomorrow. Because, you know, I came in and I didn't lose the fucking housewife kids job. I didn't have any of that to start off with, eh? So, but if I can go back out, you know, and I may come back in 10 years, but what am I going to lose then? Am I going to lose wife, house, kids job? You know, I might as well start now when I realize I've got this problem with alcohol and, you know, secure that future for myself and just got to keep doing it. Yeah. But, you know, that's me. Yeah. Thanks.
Good morning, Jacob. Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, Jacob. This is AA on air, and we're reachable via the website on www.aa.org.nz. We have a phone number you can contact at any time, which is 0800 229 6757. I'm going to ask Matt to share next. Thanks.
Hello, my name's Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
G'day, Matty.
Matt. Yeah, it's the first time I've heard Jacob's story. You're a good bastard. I like Jacob. And I like Tim too. Anyway, it's not about them, it's about me now. Yeah, my name's Matt. I'm from Wellington, actually. I grew up here. I was born in Wellington Hospital and went to school locally. Grew up in Strathmore Park, up on the hill above the airport. Lovely big family home. Mum and dad together. And yeah, went locally to school down here, went to Rongotai College and Strathmore Park School and Evans Bay Intermediate, and then actually went to Victoria University, like Jacob. We had toga parties back in the day. Yeah. $5 jugs, toga parties. But my alcohol problems probably started a little bit before university. I mean, a lot of people talk about being that sort of insecure child, you know, issues with the world. But I was never that. It was just alcohol for me was like a medicine. It put a fire in my belly. It calmed me. And it was a reward for working hard. And, I mean, I always had the means and always had the ability to get it. So, you know, I was never into drugs. But alcohol for me was my vice. And I, after university, went to actually use all my student loan and travelled to Europe and did a bit of an OE. And while I was over there, my mum and dad split up. Mum had an affair, and I came back, and the family home had been sold, and my father had moved up to Paraparam. So I moved up there with him and actually started training to join the police. And I spent a year and a half up in Kapiti working in a bar and training during the day, and then working nights where I would serve the locals alcohol. And after about a year and a half, I joined the New Zealand Police in 1999. And I was 4 years on the street as a general duties constable, and then I actually had a bad injury, busted my knee playing squash, and had to take an office job. So I went into the office and worked in the intelligence section for 4 years. And then in 2007, I became a detective and had a great career in the police, which culminated after 22 years, and I'd had enough. And by that stage, I was abusing alcohol a lot. The police culture with alcohol back then was probably bad, I guess was an easy way to describe it. There used to be a lot of jug sessions and you get fined, and there were Sunday schools after night shift, and, dealing with the stuff that you have to deal with as a policeman was easily dispersed with by abusing alcohol. And I got into a bit of trouble and never lost my job because of it, but a big part of my policing was taken away from me, and I really resented that. I used to be an informant handler, and I wasn't allowed to do that anymore because of mistakes that I made, and that really sort of put an end to my career because it was the thing that I really loved doing. So I left. I it's not Perth. You used to be out of Perth if you were mental or whatever, but it changed. So I took out all my superannuation. We paid off the mortgage, and I spent a year at home pretty much painting and building and getting drunk every day, and that's really when the alcohol took over, and I would say that I became an alcoholic. Things got worse. There's a thing called hypervigilance where you, after leaving the police, there's a great book called Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement, and it talks about hypervigilance and that, as a cop, you're always in a state of stress, and when you come down, you're a little bit bored or whatever, and you find something to put you back up. And for me, that was always alcohol. I've got a loving wife, 5 kids at home, everything I could potentially want, but internally there was something missing for me, and I had a big hole that I wanted to fill. And I started to look for risk, and I started to look for things that would give me that sense of, pleasure or risk or, that sort of adrenaline rush that you would get with being a policeman. So I started to become on the edge, and it's then that I realised that I was about to lose everything, my wife, my kids, my house, my cars, my money. So I went online actually and looked at the AA website, and there was a questionnaire there, and it said, have you? And it's like 12 questions. I remember going, yes. So I scored 12 out of 12. And I realised, mate, you got a problem. Best you get yourself to a meeting. So I rocked down that Sunday afternoon to the local meeting in Paraparam, and never looked back, really. I resonated, and I listened to what people were saying. And yeah, the similarities for me were overwhelming, and I knew right then that I was in the right place, and that I needed to get well, and the only way I was going to be able to do that was through AA. So I lasted 6 months, and then I thought, no, you've got this, you're not an alcoholic, you're going to just be able to drink within yourself. You're going to be able to just drink on Fridays, maybe drink 4% beer, blah, blah, blah. And I lasted about 6 months and I progressively went downhill even more. And then I came back about 2.5 years ago and went really well. Got a year up, had my birthday, and then sort of went, you know what, I don't really like these people too much in these meetings. And then there's several that I did, but it's really not for me. I reckon I can do this by myself. So I did. I pretty much went a year and a half without going to AA, staying sober. But the hole inside me was, you know, getting dark and I was more and more unhappy with life. And I actually decided while I was overseas to drink. And yeah, it culminated in falling asleep in a New York park and losing my phone, my wallet, all my cool shit that I got over the day. And thankfully, I had my passport strapped to my waist, so I was able to fly back to New Zealand the following day. So I came back to New Zealand and felt really sorry for myself. Poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. And spent the next few weeks drinking. And yeah, constantly. Until Tim here said, Matthew, best you sort your shit out and come to a meeting, which I did. Not till the next day, actually. I had a few beers in the fridge and I said to him, just let me finish these beers. So I did, and he took me to a meeting drunk, and that was kind of a little bit silly. But anyway, I relapsed again, and then, on the first of this month, I gave it away and I'm back, and I'm, you know, attending meetings most days and talking to Tim and Jacob, and just immersing myself back in AA, because I know it's the only thing that's going to work for me. You know, I am an alcoholic. I had a similar thing to Jacob, at a meeting one night, a softball function one night, said to me, it's all right, Matt, you're an alcoholic. Now, I didn't smash her over like Jacob did, but I was so offended when someone said to me, you're an alcoholic, and I thought, what do you fucking know about me? No, I'm not, I've just got a drinking problem, but I know now that I am. And one of the, you know, senior members up in the coast there shared one time about how he was pleased to be able to identify and be actually called an alcoholic, because it gave him a sense of understanding exactly what was wrong with him. And, you know, I feel the same way. You know, I have a disease. I love the stuff, to be fair. You know, it's been hard the last few weeks. And every night when I get tired or I get stressed or I'm sore or whatever from the day, the first thought that comes into my mind is, you know, everything would be better with a beer or a bourbon. But, you know, history says that Matthew's days are over of drinking, and they talk about it being a progressive illness, and I'm testament to that. You know, as soon as I pick up again, I go right back to where I previously was. You know, there is no cure for alcoholism for me. It's AA all the way. And, you know, when I came in, if you would have said to me, Matt, you're gonna relapse a few times, yeah, I probably would have believed them. If they were going to say, look, you're going to have to be here the rest of your life, I would have run to the hills. But knowing what I know, you know, I don't have another relapse in me. I think I've used all my 9 lives, and, you know, if I'm honest with myself, I can't drink again. And so, you know, if I'm an old man in AA, so be it. Yeah. I'll leave it there. Here we go. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Matt. This is the AA meeting on air. You can reach us on our 0800 number, which is 0800 229 6757. Our website is www.aa.org.nz, and on that website you can find an AA meeting anywhere in New Zealand. So it's a good resource and if you think you might have a drinking problem, you can do that
quiz that was mentioned, and see if that's something for you. I'm going to ask our last guest today to share, and his name is Tim.
Thanks. My name's Tim, and I'll call it.
Hey, Tim.
Homegrown Beginners Newtown. It's good to be here. I realise I haven't worn deodorant today. it's just that vague smell of me in a small, tight room with a bunch of guys, and it is me, you know. But I'm looking good. That's the main thing. It's good to be here. I'll share the what was that?
You said you're looking good, and I'm like.
I'll tell you, I've actually done this more times than I can count. I've sat in this room and I've shared my story, and it's not a story, it's a saga, you know. And in the past it was, you know, how by my sterling intellect and iron sense of will I pulled myself up by the bootstraps to the staggering yeah, it's like it was that. But as years go by, how I actually see my life, especially childhood, that's actually really different. You know, like when I first got sober, I would say, oh, everyone loved me and I had this great childhood, quite idyllic. It actually wasn't. That was hard, but I was comparing it to other childhoods. You know, I don't know. It didn't harden me, but that was a tough childhood. You know, I grew up around an alcoholic home with people, not so much violent, but really volatile. You know, I grew up around... Basically, I do a threat assessment on every person I meet. What sort of mood are they in today? And I'll always do that. That's how it is. And I think what's important to me is it's that I saw alcoholism as a kid, and you could see how it's going to go. You know, I decided I wasn't going to drink from the age of five. I'm not going to be like Dad or the uncles or all the various people. I thought, I do not want that. But what impressed me was every from time to time people would come back, members of the family or friends from overseas, and they were like really exotic people. They'd been to Southern California, Southeast Asia, through Afghanistan, Europe. And there was something about those people that was cool and was never spoken about, but they were people who did drugs. They were drug people. So I'm looking at them, they were cool. And then I thought, if I drink... I could see, you know, basically, I grew up in Kapi Coast. You're basically going to start drinking. You might move to the Hutt Valley. And the idea of getting married, having kids, and living in the Hutt Valley horrified me, because you could see it. You know, and you're going to get fat. You'll get, you know, have all these little horrible kids, snot noses, and you're going to go nowhere. You're going to slave your guts out for this family who will hate you at the end. And I didn't want that, you know. And I looked at these people from overseas and I thought they were, you know, their girlfriends were interesting looking, not like those drab women in Kapiti, and just like, that's what I wanted. But I also, but what happened is I had a drink at the age of 12. I'd been baling hay and, you know, I was just big enough to pick up a bale of hay and throw it on the back of a truck at the age of 12. And it was a big bottle of Leopard Lager and I drank the whole thing. And that's when I first, like, it was this event in my life, you know. It felt good and I wanted more. And basically, I felt significantly better is how it is. There's all sorts of ways to describe it, but I felt good. And it had me, you know. I have alcoholism. And what that meant is by the time I'm 14, I'm at Kapiti College, I'm not thinking about school, I'm thinking about getting pissed on the weekend, how are we going to get the money, who can buy it for us, totally obsessed about that. I want to be a drug addict, but I don't like marijuana, but I smoked dope, that's all there was available. I don't like marijuana. It makes me introvert, self-conscious, makes me self-conscious, don't like it. But I didn't want to be a drunk, you know. But I was kicked out of Kapiti College for selling dope when I was 16. Really? And it was a big deal back then. And I was in trouble with the police, Matt's friends, you know. And and it was decided we better send Tim to Australia, where I don't know where he's not here. And I was packed off to Australia at the age of 17, you know, and it was like, it was scary, you know, and I got around. That's the thing. when I tell the story, I should always preface it with, I'm about to tell you a fabricated story based on very few facts. I don't know. I got arrested in every state and territory in Australia going around it anti-clockwise, except Tasmania, before I was legally allowed to drink in Australia. I ended up in Perth. I started out, I went to Sydney, South Australia, all around, including Australian Capital Territory, which is, that was, yeah, and I'm a drunk, I'm lost, I just always had this feeling of not belonging. I don't know, it's standard alcoholic stuff, but I always felt different, really different. But I, I got involved in a really serious, like very young, like at 18, I'm on the golf, involved in very serious stuff. And I just, at that point, I had enough common sense. I remember just basic, really, just stuff that saved me. And I remember having dinner with these seriously bad dudes up there, because we had to have a business arrangement with these people, and me thinking, I can't be around people who have table manners like this. It was, and just that decision, I just remember getting on a bus from the Gold Coast and going to Sydney, and I got a job, bricklayers labouring, I saved up, I went to Europe. It was probably a smart move, and I got around, and boy, the hard drugs started coming in then. By this stage, by 17, I'd started doing heroin, but it didn't become a major thing. What I've discovered by my early 20s, when drinking had really escalated and I'm making serious mistakes, that if I was shooting heroin, I didn't need to drink. And hard drugs, I could always not drink if I was doing drugs. And if I was doing, you know, one could cancel out the other. And it was just my life, you know, I mean, I lived in Europe twice in London, once in Amsterdam, I lived in Greece. I mean, I really got around, back to Australia, the trips back to Australia, back to Southeast Asia. He took huge risks.
Boogie
boards? Yeah. At 25, there was this time there where I was, my life was pretty set, you know, I'd married well is where it happened. I'd married well, I had a good job, we had a house in Sydney, and I was pretty much set, you know, I had everything. And it was like, well, this is a good time to get clean and sober. And I'd get clean and sober, and I just couldn't stand it, you know. It was, I was baffled by it, because I knew I'm going to lose everything. Like, by that stage, I understood, without knowing it, I sort of understood alcoholism. That if I pick up, I'm, you know, life as I know it will be over. But I couldn't stay clean and sober, you know. And
was that meetings? Do you go to meetings?
I went to the wrong fellowship. You know, I thought I had a drug problem. Problem with me is I have alcoholism. You know, and for me, that's so important to me. You know, like I have a physical allergy, which means when I drink, I want more badly. If I try and stop abruptly, I want it desperately. But the more subtle and dangerous thing is that mental obsession, you know, like within me, it just becomes day by day more and more difficult to stay clean and sober. I become in myself more and more uncomfortable. And that's what AA gives me. It gives me this way of life where I can live comfortably clean and sober most of the time, you know, like that's the thing most of the time. But anyway,
you're 4 years sober. Do you still feel like that, Tim?
From time to time, yeah.
Sorry, that's all
right. Anyway.
No, it's not.
But by 25, I have it all. I'm having these days where I'm thinking, shit, I've got everything, and I couldn't do it. And I basically made a commitment to that I will never get clean and sober. And it became clear that my life will be hard drugs, because there's less damage to that, and plus I like it. And I did, and I knew I'll be dying younger. I knew I'd be going to jail. But I was okay with it, because the truth is, it felt good, and I felt good a lot of the time. But as it went along, it wasn't working as effectively, you know. And my life, there was nothing about my life normal at all. Like I was so deeply involved in that drug subculture. I was a lone wolf. Like I had very, very few people in my life. I didn't trust anyone unless I absolutely had to, and that was, I only needed them if they were making money or I was making money. They were not in my life. But then I was so sick of it before it ended. When I was 39, the police came screaming down my driveway and it's over. I don't know if he's Stuart Neal. Yeah, Stuart got me. I remember he was saying, I'm Stuart Neal from school. And I'm like, fuck, I don't give a fuck. You're a cop. He's busting me. Now I don't care. But it was this relief. I thought, right, now I can get clean and sober. You know, the business is over. But I couldn't. And I did a home detention stretch. I was so sick of that life and I had nowhere to turn. And a girlfriend gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous while I was doing home detention. The story I tell is I read the doctor's opinion and I identified with the allergy. That was important. But I don't know. It was this really hazy time. You know, you've got to watch that. You know, you later you come up with the story. Like, I don't know.
Have you been to a meeting?
I'm getting there, Matt. Jesus. This is an AA meeting. You just stop it. I'm in my flow here.
Okay,
right?
You're fine. You're doing well.
Yeah. Just stay there.
Okay.
Right. I went to an AA meeting. It was grim. It was Tawa, and it was grim. Like, I'm there, and they are not. Hey, good to see you. That was not happening, man. They're like, who is this junky piece of shit? That's what it felt like, you know. But I was out of options, and I went to AA. It was the Carpety Tuesday Serenity meeting, and they were, these people, they were happy to see me. They were like, it was, no one had been happy. I can't overstate that. No one had been happy to see me in a long time. And I went along and I just kept going. I came off methadone. I was on a huge methadone dose. All the pills stopped, the dexamphetamine, all the stuff I was taking. And I got clean and sober. And I stuck at it for a number of years, you know. And I was an AA guy, you know. I was fully involved in service. Then I started stepping back from the program, which is the way of life in AA. And I paid a price, you know. I was in Sydney. And I picked up and I didn't know at that day where I relapsed that it would be 5 years before I got clean and sober again. I didn't know. And in that 5 years, the nature of alcoholism is a progressive illness and I got worse, like a lot worse. Things happened that I thought could never happen to me, like ever. I never thought I'd end up in prison. I thought I was too smart for that, too everything for that. I ended up in Rimutaka prison twice. I ended up at the Bridge Rehab twice, you know, like... It was horrendous. And the interesting thing about the day I got sober was that there was nothing different about it. The day I finally got sober again, I went out to the company meeting Sunday. And I was sitting there sweating, shaking, shit. It was not good. And I've been doing that every Sunday. It was one day. I've been doing that for about 7 weeks. It's been a 7-week relapse. And no one had any hope for me. It wasn't like, you've got this. It was just, here he is again, you know. And it stuck. You know, a guy called Neil H. helped me out. He's always helped me out. At times, I don't particularly like the guy. Sometimes I hate him, but he's never let me down, this one AA guy. And he lent me money. When I got sober, I didn't just get sober and get lovely. I get sober and I stop taking drugs and I go mad. And it reached a crescendo at 6 months sober. It got more and more uncomfortable. The difference between crazy and not crazy is if you can walk around without talking to yourself, you are not crazy. At 6 months sober, I was crazy and I had to go stay at Neil's for a month and I'm walking around. It wasn't pleasant conversations in my head. It was, I'm going to gut that guy alive. It was hateful and I got through it, you know, and then it started getting better. And each year I stay clean and sober, it gets progressively easier being me, easier to be around me. You know, it does get better and better. I firmly believe in sponsorship. Like, I have a sponsor. His name's Dennis. I speak to him regularly. I'm strictly a big book guy, so I don't do therapy at all. I look for the way of life again and again in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Other people can take medications. I can't. You know, I have a clean sobriety. I don't do anything else. There's nothing between me and the world except, you know, the book and the fellowship. You know, AA for me is really important. It is two things. The program, which is the way of life contained in that book in the first 164 pages, and the fellowship, which is the people, and I don't get one without the other. They are equally important to me, and I've got to be there for the next guy. I don't just get, and it's not about me. My recovery is about me. It's about service to God and others. Now, today I'm sitting here looking good. I've got the new ute, I've got everything. It's not about that. It's not. When people say the rewards, it's not about that. It's that I'm of some benefit to you. And that I'm all right being me, you know. I'm, I think that's about it from me. Although not really, I might just keep going for a bit. Matt, do you have any questions?
Yes, I have lots of questions. The thing that always surprises me is how you are so generous with your time and how you put others first, even when, like you say, you don't like some certain people. What happens if some idiot comes to you and asks you, you know, some person that you think is...
Hurry up with your question. 30 seconds.
Would you sponsor everybody?
No.
So why not? Or why?
Okay, I think we're running out of time about now.
Too hard a question for you.
I would not say no, I'd refer them to someone else. But yeah, I have to have a genuine love for someone to sponsor them. I don't just, I've got to think, yep, we can do this together. I don't waste my time or their time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for your shares today. We're going to ask Jacob to read the promises now on from the big book, pages 83 to 84.
My name is Jacob and I'm still an alcoholic. This is the AA promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. That's from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 83 to 84.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thanks, Jacob. This is the AA meeting on air. If you're listening out there and think you might have issue with drinking, then you can reach us on 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 6757, and someone will be able to answer your call and help you out with any questions you've got. We also have a website, www.aa.org.nz. That's www.aa.org.nz. And that has a whole lot of resources on there. It has a meeting finder. You can find an AA meeting pretty much anywhere in New Zealand. And... yeah, that's going to be us coming to the end of the meeting today. So it's been great to have the Newtown
beginners
here to share their stories. And we're going to finish up the meeting today with the Serenity Prayer. So I invite you to help me close the meeting with that. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. Cheers, everybody.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.